by virtue of the word flexibility, it's not a one size fits all. I don't think you should necessarily have a black and white policy as to what you can and can't do. For us as a business, it was around people being clear on their role and what's expected of them.
Welcome to Building Doors. In this series, you'll develop the skills to build a roadmap for success, get inspired by those leaders who have come before you, and give you the confidence to stop waiting and start building.
Michael is the Chief Operating Officer for McKenzie Group Consulting, an industry leader in regulatory and compliance advisory services to the building industry and part of the Bureau Veritas Group. He's been with McKenzie Group since 2007, and then he has moved into the state manager position from 2016 to 2022. He was recently promoted to the new role of Chief Operating Officer in 2023, where he's been responsible for quite a major restructure and now oversees the group's operations and 140 employees across the country. Why I wanted to get Michael on the podcast is to chat more around what it means to build doors and build your career through the ranks in an organization. Because quite commonly now we see people jumping from job to job in different roles. So what does it mean to move into a COO role and come through all the different positions and a restructure in an organization? So let's get down, get stuck into it and have a chat to Michael. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast, Michael.
No problem.
I was very keen to get you on and learn a bit more around your story because young in a COO position and quite significant progression.
Yep.
I thought it would be really interesting to find out where you came from, where your values were shaped, and then talk through a little bit acquisitions and a lot going on in the business world so we can talk through that. So firstly, tell me, why did you choose a career in the field that you're in now, in building certifications?
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
By accident.
By accident.
Yeah. No, it really was. And that's a pretty familiar theme for building surveyors. Not a lot of people come out of school saying, I want to be a building surveyor.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what it was, in all honesty. So I did pretty well at school. Like I got a good OP that gave me options, but my options were pretty varied. Teacher.
Yep.
Was probably at the top of the list, to be honest. I had a great experience at school. I really enjoyed those years and that kind of fed into, you know, the idea of liking being, you know, a secondary school teacher.
Yeah.
I'd had some exposure through family and friends into the legal profession.
Yeah.
So a lawyer was an option.
Okay.
The decision that won at that point in time was a degree in construction management. Mm-hmm. So that's what I actually did at university. And so that got me into the construction industry.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was studying that course, I had an opportunity. I got a job essentially as a cadet building surveyor. I didn't really know too much about it or what it was, but I took the job because it was a good job. It worked with uni at the time and the rest is history.
Yeah.
I'm still sort of in that profession, which is really funny because if I reflect back on those options and those different career paths that I had, I think I get a little bit of all of that, or a lot actually, of all of that in my job.
Yeah.
Teaching.
Yeah.
Educating.
True.
It's a very legal profession. You know, it's a regulatory role. So dealing with legislation, building codes and all that sort of stuff and construction. You know, the tactile nature of construction was probably the thing that drew me in most.
So when you looked at, because obviously you've got the building surveying pathway if you study there and then you've got construction management, do you feel that when you were studying it, the interest was peaked then, or did you find it was more when you were practically actually doing it?
On the job.
Yeah.
100%. And it wasn't immediate either. I would say I probably worked as a building surveyor for 2 years before I made a decision to commit to and stick to that path.
Mm.
Construction management, I had lofty ambitions of, you know, running big CBD commercial construction sites.
Yeah.
I held on to those aspirations, you know, for quite a while before I sort of agreed or committed to this path of building surveying as a profession.
I think what a lot of people don't realise is that construction management holds a lot of different pathways. There was an event last night and I was talking to a guy that he had studied a dual degree in construction management and then also legal. And he's now an in-house legal counsel and now looking to become a commercial manager. You've done construction management, become a COO of a building certification access and consulting in a huge firm across Australia.
Yep.
So I think it's a very interesting degree that there's a lot of pathways from it too.
And it is a diversity, you know, even for people that become construction managers, that I think the diversity is a big part of the attraction.
Mm.
So yeah, that's definitely true for my story.
So in terms of as things changed? So you said that there was still those lofty ambitions at one point to move into that construction management or project management even side. What changed? When was the moment that it changed for you where you went, I actually think this is going to be my career here?
Opportunity, I think. You mentioned before that I feel like I've achieved a lot in a pretty short period of time.
Mm.
And I think those opportunities existed. I think seeing it is a resource short profession. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of people around. At that point in time, it was heavily, or still to this day, it's a heavily aging profession. So there were opportunities for up and comers.
Yep.
And those opportunities found me, or I found them, or combination of. And I think that was probably the thing that got me to commit to the profession at that particular point in time. But it pretty quickly evolved because of the environment that I found myself in at McKenzie Group into much more than that. I genuinely enjoyed the work, the project opportunities, the clients, and everything that came with the environment that I found myself in. So it's not just a job, you know, it was more than that pretty quickly. And 20 years almost now, I think.
Yeah.
I started in 2004 in the profession and 2007 at McKenzie Group. So it's a long period of time and I still very much enjoy it. I don't regret a decision in the past at all.
Were you always, because you've had such pretty good progression throughout your careers and quick progression too. When you talk about the fact that it's an aging demographic there that you've got as well, in terms of a COO, you're on the younger end as well of that side of things.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, were you always ambitious and driven to progress or was it opportunistic? So I'm sure there's people listening to this that are thinking, I could probably see myself there one day.
Yeah.
What do you think that was for you? Was there a plan or was it opportunistic through?
No, it's ambition. Right. I would say it's ambition. I think I get that from my father. Dad's probably one of my earliest role models, if you like. Dad held executive C-suite type jobs in finance, not in construction.
Mm.
But that was without a doubt a pretty big influence on me in the formative years.
Mm.
The ambition is the thing that has driven me. I am an ambitious individual. It still am. And I think that's probably the thing that's opened the doors for me.
Mm. So as you've grown as a business and with the acquisitions as well that McKenzie's had over the past couple of years, how have you found that that has shaped your leadership style and what you're learning now? Because I know that a lot of people I've spoken to are shifting and learning how to deal with so much change. How has that shaped you?
Heaps, and it continues to. McKenzie has changed a lot since 2007 when I joined. So I joined, the Queensland office was sort of beginning, if you like. It was very small and it had quite aggressive growth over probably the 10 years, that first decade. But the business changed a lot as a consequence of that growth. I've been very, I'd sort of chunk my career up into stages or blocks now. I think there are, and this is with the benefit of hindsight and retrospect, is you look back and it's very clear to me now that, you know, what it takes to run a small team it wasn't a startup. The business had been around for a long time, but it had, that's what we were trying to do at the time in Queensland, was establish the business. You have to change and evolve as the team grows and changes. And that's been very obvious to me over the journey, is that, you know, what worked previously in a different team with different dynamics won't necessarily work moving forward. So I spent a lot of time reflecting on that individually. Mm. And thinking about those sorts of changes that are necessary to facilitate that growth. And that's been a big, you know, the stepping out of running the region or the office, essentially, the Queensland team into the national role has been a pretty significant step change.
Mm.
It was kind of the difference between 30 and what is now close to 150 sort of people. So it obviously warrants a different approach and an elevation of your leadership capabilities and the way you deal with people, you know, around you. But I'm really enjoying that. That's the thing I'm loving most.
How do you adapt to that? Because I have been curious about this, because you're not the only person that goes through these changes. I had one GM said it's like going from the girlfriend to being the wife. I was like, that's interesting as an analogy. But how have you found going through those levels and now how you led then to how you lead a bigger team now? So what's your approach or changes you've had to make when the team's scaled?
It's the leadership piece. Mm. You know, I think you can manage hands-on.
Mm.
You know, management and leadership are obviously two very different things, related but fundamentally different too. And I think early in my career, it was hands-on management. Mm. It was leading by example. But the team was of a size and a scale that allowed that to be the case. Very, very different now. I think that the focus is on the growth of the people around you, empowerment and support to people, giving people an opportunity to perform their roles. So clarity of expectations, I think, is a really big thing for people. If people are clear on their role and what's expected of them, then they're a good chance of being able, or a better chance of being able, to fulfill that role. And my interactions with them, so our broader executive team, are very much focused on giving them the support and the structure and the empowerment that they need to do their job. And that's what's been really pleasing in the last 12 months following the, you know, the restructure exercise that we've done in our business, is seeing some of those benefits come to the fore.
I want to talk more around, and you would have seen this as you've grown, and also talking amongst the industry, what are some of the mistakes you think that leaders make, or that some firms make, when they're trying to grow a team, that you think people should try to avoid? What are some of the mistakes or traps that you think people can fall into?
It's a tough question. I mean, and we haven't got it all right either. You know, some of our experiences and my experiences are from, you know, living and
learning.
I think it's that growth mindset that exists around the business, and the fact that, you know, if you're serious about growing a business of scale, you can't do it all yourself. You have to trust and empower people and have them buy into a vision. So there needs to be a vision. The vision needs to be communicated, understood. But if you get buy-in and engagement from a collective group of people, then you can drive, you know, a business forward. I think creating space and opportunity, and then giving support and encouraging that way of development, has been really important. Probably one of the most important parts of my journey so far, I think.
Because there's always that temptation, especially probably when you had a smaller team, of stepping in, fixing, solving, and then you just get to that scale where you've got a big team now, a huge team now. What are you seeing in terms of trends for some of the younger generations coming through? What are some of the trends that you're seeing in terms of their expectation from leadership and what they're looking at organisations that you might be seeing?
I think their expectations are more than they were. They're certainly growing. I think it speaks to that vision and purpose thing again. It's hard for you to expect people to turn up to work and work for an employer over a long period of time unless they're genuinely engaged in what it is that the business is doing and what it's about. I think that importance of having a really clear vision and having that permeate right through the organisation, I think that's quite important to a lot of the younger generation. But their expectations are also very much more, you know, work-life balance. That's a really big focus, and trying to facilitate that and make that work has obviously been a challenge for everybody. Big focus in our business of trying to get that right. But yeah, they're pretty, I think the expectations are high, is what I would say, of the new generation on leadership.
Yep, I agree. Work-life balance, let's talk about it, because this is one of the things that so many people are grappling with, because you've got people coming into the industry, they're ambitious, they want to build doors, they want to create opportunities for their career, but they want flexibility too.
Yep.
And then you've got organisations trying to meet halfway, or trying to go, well, we recognise that we need to train and develop and grow our team, but then flexibility is a desire too. How has that changed the way that you manage or lead and how you structure it in your business too?
It was a quantum sort of shift, wasn't it? It was simmering away, obviously, before the COVID years, but I think the necessities of COVID sort of accelerated, I think, the whole flexible working, work from home type arrangement. And we were no different as a business to anyone else in terms of trying to struggle to be geared up for that to work and to be able to support that. I'm really happy with how we've been able to do that. We don't have a hard and fast policy. We have all sorts of levels of flexibility, which I think is important. I've always thought, you know, by virtue of the word flexibility, it's not a one size fits all. I don't think you should necessarily have a black and white policy as to what you can and can't do. You know, I think for us as a business, it was around people being clear on their role and what's expected of them in their role. And then we give them the opportunity to manage that. And if that means it's leave early for school pickup, or it's a work from home arrangement, or a hybrid type arrangement, we've got all of that happening in our business. And pretty well. No problems or major challenges. So we're making it work. I think that's probably testament to our people and our managers and the way they manage the day-to-day running of the business and the expectations of the people, but it's working pretty well for us.
Yeah, that's awesome. What about your own work-life balance? Because you've got young family as well, kids. It's so much fun. Loose cannons sometimes. Never know what they're going to come up with.
Yeah.
How are you managing that, like the balance as you've progressed through your career, because you've progressed at an age where you would have a young family too.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested with children of similar age, like yep. how you manage your work-life balance too.
Terribly.
At least you're honest.
Yeah, 100%. Ambition won the battle for a long time
yeah.
for me. And I don't mind saying that. This has been a hard lesson for me to learn or skill for me to learn, and I still have to work at it today. My wife's been great at supporting the kids. You know, that there's no silver bullet there. I'm just lucky to have a wife who's been able to do most of the heavy lifting on that front, which has allowed me to do what I've needed to do professionally. But I'm still learning now. I mean, having two beautiful girls at home's a nice draw card. Like, it's not hard for me to turn the computer off and head home of an evening. You know, you've got something really important to come home to, which helps. But, you know, from my perspective, being aware of the fact that I haven't always had that right, and then having really strong networks around me. I mean, my mentors in the business, the people that were running McKenzie Group when they brought me in, were excellent at supporting me through those sorts of areas. So access to mentoring, coaching, you know, life coaching. I regularly see psychologists to help balance that sort of stuff and help you with processing of life and work's challenges. So as I'm getting older, I'm getting better at it, but it hasn't come naturally to me, that part of the role.
Yeah, and that's interesting. It's not uncommon either. I was talking to someone this morning about this very, very same issue. Knowing what you know now and having dealt with psychologists and things like that around the balance and the ambition, is there anything you would have done differently?
I don't think fundamentally differently. I mean, there would have been lots of probably little things that I would have done differently. I mean, trying to compartmentalize home and work or your profession and have them sort of run in parallel, I just don't think works. I mean, I think as you get older, you realize it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. And, you know, it's your life and all those pieces of the puzzle need to sort of coexist, I think is the point. I don't think that's a concept that I had a great grasp on. They were very kind of home and work was sort of two things that were running in parallel. And, you know, like I said, there was that ambition, then that pressure I put on myself around professional progression that probably got a bit too much focus, I think, in the early years.
You've hit something there that I think is really interesting that you talk about. And COVID helped. I did say COVID also so brought the family life into the work life and blurred those lines a little bit.
Yep.
And I think there's good and bad from that. I think the good part is us acknowledging that we are one whole person, and that means we have a family and we have a work and we have to juggle both. And you can't turn one on or turn one off. Both the two are a juggle. But then the other thing that highlights as well is that you need to be able to try and balance delivering in one area. And I had a previous guest that talked about the fact Phil DeBella was saying it's always work-life harmony. So this whole idea of just balance, well, sometimes you're going to be needed in more than one area and then the other as well. So have you had a coach as well through that journey?
Yeah, a couple.
Talk about this all the time. What kind of impact has it had, like having that coach and that support for your growth?
Huge. This is another thing I give a lot of props to management, my previous sort of management, the directors of McKenzie Group. There's always been access in the business to a coaching facility and it's been heavily encouraged. And I've personally experienced the growth and development that comes from having access to an opportunity like that. And we would have in our group, you know, we'd have probably 20 people using that facility, you know, for their growth and development. I think it's really, really important. Yeah, I've had a couple of different coaches over the years, and then I've used more sort of personal and psychology at different points in time, you know, to help sort of balance all that out. But I think it's an incredible tool.
How would your kids describe you as a dad? What kind of dad's Michael?
Do you know what they say? They do this stuff at school where they, like on Father's Day, dad's a good cook, is what they say. Like, I think they like my food.
Oh, that's good. You're a little bit of a chef.
Yeah. No, look, I've enjoyed, it's been really good for me. Becoming a dad. I was a boy household. I do have a sister, but she was fourth in the queue. So our household growing up was heavily male dominated. And I've got two girls, which
surprise.
Is completely foreign, but I love it. I love it. And I love them. Like, they're unreal. Yeah, look, how would they describe me? I like being active with them. Yeah, I like them getting outside and doing all that sort of stuff and supporting them and teaching them stuff. I think that's a cool thing as a dad is teaching your kids riding a bike, riding a skateboard, kicking a footy, all the boy stuff.
What's your signature recipe?
Paella.
Oh, yeah. Is chorizo and everything in it. Yeah, it's good. Are you like authentic?
Yeah, I got a pan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, got a couple of pans. I got a big one for a big crowd and a slightly scaled down.
Yeah. Love that.
Yeah, I mean, most people would know. Like if you ask that question of a lot of people, they'd
know you're the paella man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you say active stuff, so what are some of the hobbies and stuff that you do with the kids too?
Oh, look, they're really active. They're at that age where they're doing all sorts of stuff. So, you know, we're a pretty active family. We like to get out and ride bikes and you know, we've got two border collies. Which
that'll keep you active.
Keep us active and get us out of the house. But the kids do all sorts of stuff, you know, they're swimming and you know, sports and arts and all that sort of stuff.
So going back to your childhood and what shaped you as you obviously recognise that you're ambitious, where do you think, like if you look back to your modelling with parents and things like that, what were your parents like when you were growing up and your family life?
Yeah, the leadership traits, I was the eldest of those four. So I think that was probably the beginnings of that sort of, you know, the leadership part of my persona. And that was, I think, amplified by, I lost my mum when I was 11. So going in at the start of grade seven, so the eldest of four kids. Mm. We grew up for a large chunk of our childhood without mum around. I think that's well and truly reflected and or shaped, you know, me. You know, I'm a very responsible person, almost like a second sort of caretaker for the siblings. I think was a pretty influential part of my childhood that I see appear regularly in me now, today.
Yeah. That makes sense because you are really responsible. You do strike me as very responsible, very, and clearly as well, like I'm sure you were always well beyond your years because at that age, taking on that level of responsibility for the family and almost like co-parenting with your dad and being that leader would have shaped your leadership style now.
Yeah. And relationships with the siblings and all that sort of stuff. So it's a pretty, you know, major
huge
event in my life. Yeah.
Yeah. Huge. And what about your dad as a figure? Was he quite ambitious too? Did mention that before. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. My wife says I'm my father and I think she's right.
She'd know.
Yeah, yeah. No, dad's very similar to me in terms of the responsibility and the ambition. And, you know, there are a lot of similarities there between the two of us.
It's incredible. I mean, I've known you for a while now. I'd never known that about your mum, but so much makes sense about how responsible you are and how that's clearly shaped your level of accountability as a leader and how you have led the family as well. That's incredible. What would you say to people like, you know, because there are other people that might be listening that are going through loss at that young age, like, did you take a lot from that experience now that's built you to be the person you are today?
Yeah, you do. I mean, it's a very difficult thing to go through and you need a lot of support, you know, to get through it. I don't know if I think about the things that it builds, like resilience is probably one of those things. It's a big thing for young children to have to deal with, but it makes you stronger. Mm. I've probably never thought about whether that experience, how it has manifested in me in detail, but it would have. It's had an influence, definitely.
Yeah. So what's next for you? What's coming up? What's the exciting goals you have personally and also for the business moving forward?
So I'm really happy in this role. I think when I took this COO role, it sort of coincided with a pretty significant change to the business in terms of how it was structured and run. It had been running a certain way for the previous probably 10 or 15 years. I'm super excited about the journey that we're on together at the business. So very excited about that opportunity. For me personally in the business, you know, I've been given a very significant remit and opportunity to influence that and to steer that restructuring process and that setting us up for the next phase of the company. You know, the company's 35 years old, which is something we're very proud of.
Mm.
You know, I'm sort of looking forward to the opportunity to look after it for the next phase of its existence and continue this growth and development journey that we've been on.
Mm.
And I'm only a year and a half or whatever into the role, or just under a year and a half into the role, but I've got a pretty clear vision of where we're going and, you know, what the future looks like. For me personally, you know, outside of work, very similar too, quite, you know, very settled. Like we've got the two kids, you know, it's really just, it's probably focusing on them, I think, getting them through the schooling years and supporting them and enjoying that time. Traveling with the family, you know, we did a big trip to Europe over Christmas. It's amazing how quickly the kids grow up and you sort of look and you think, gosh, how many more years have I got of opportunities to do this before they grow up?
Yeah.
the next decade is kind of just keep on, keep at it.
And the experiences with your family and juggling that with the, you know, the work growth and things
That's
like
right.
that as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to touch on just one thing you said there, which I think is interesting. What are some of the, there was a restructure and no doubt you coming into this role, there would have been changes and shifts. What are some of the changes and shifts that you felt that you needed to make as a business and what impact has that had?
The simplest way to describe what we've done is genuinely nationalizing the business. So McKenzie Group had five operating divisions, if you like, and they were probably a little bit too siloed in many ways. And whilst there were, you know, it was all McKenzie Group and it was all operating under the one business, there was an opportunity to do that better and to nationalize that better. So the restructure was all around facilitating that, turning, let's say, five operating groups into one, you know, national business. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've done from a structural perspective. But I think the really good stuff that's coming out of it is the clarity of the vision, the opportunities and the pathways that have been created for key people in the business or people in the business and people who might aspire to join the business. I think we've made significant strides in improving those opportunities and those prospects.
What are some of the challenges you see for the industry moving forward as a whole too?
The building surveying industry?
Yeah.
Resourcing's a really hard one. It's still not a mainstream profession. And so there's not enough people coming through to supplement, you know, the people retiring at the back end of their career. And it's also been a pretty tumultuous period from a regulatory perspective. You know, there's a bit of, you don't have to look too far to find some bad press around building surveying, unfair and typically incorrectly sort of portrayed, but it exists nonetheless. So I think from a government and a regulator perspective, things could be done better to facilitate, you know, the viability and growth of the profession. You know, we work very hard at McKenzie Group on professionalism, respect for the profession, you know, both people respecting ourselves as professionals, but also the respect that we demand from and expect from the industry for the important sort of statutory role that we're playing. So I think it's that stuff that we need to keep, as an industry, we need to keep tabs on. We need people coming through. We need people to see the opportunities that exist as a building surveyor, working in this regulatory environment. But there needs to be heavy advocacy, a lot of advocacy from the industry's perspective to the regulators and to the politicians to make sure, you know, we don't make it harder than it needs to be.
Great insight. I'm going to ask you, what are three leadership tips you would give personally now? So if you were to think of your own personal mentors around leadership, what are three tips that you would give somebody that, you know, maybe there's somebody that is a senior building surveyor and they see a pathway to associate and then potentially, you know, heading up a business. What are three leadership lessons that you think are important for them that you've learned?
I think communications, I don't know whether it's a lesson, but it's a really important trait. I think you have to be able to articulate your vision really clearly. I think if you can't do that, it's hard for people to bring those around them along for the journey.
Yep.
So I think really working on communication, I'd consider that a strength of mine, but I still work on it. And I spend a lot of time valuing and respecting the power that well-articulated communication can bring. Mm-hmm. So how you message, I think is really important. So I think leaders working on that, spending time thinking about that. Trust in people around them. I think you need to create space for people to be able to grow into roles. And I think there needs to be obviously structure and support, but there needs to be an element of trust and creating room for people to grow and to grow into those particular roles. And that's a hard balance to get right sometimes, but I think something to be working on. And I think the third thing would be probably a personal one, I think, is to be kind and supportive to yourself and the expectations on yourself in the role. I mean, you know, it's not an easy thing to do and it's not always tangible or measurable as to what you're doing. So I think being supportive to yourself and not being too hard on yourself is probably pretty important and you know, reflect on lessons learned if you need to, but move forward, keep moving forward.
I love how you talked about that as well, being kind to yourself, because leaders are people and people aren't perfect. There's going to be things where you go, oh, could have maybe done that differently, or I might approach that differently next time. But you learn and you become a leader with every single decision that you make in that space that teaches you something. And the final one that I'm keen to find out from you, and this is personally and business, what's the legacy you hope to leave from, you know, your life with your family and work? When you look back, what do you hope the legacy is?
From a personal perspective, that's a good question. I want to instill in, say, my kids, you know, the values of hard work. I like hard work. I've never shied away from hard work. So, you know, I think my most important job in life is, you know, molding those two young people, you know, and, you know, that work ethic, respect for people. So I want them to be, I guess, aspirational, have plans and drive. I think they'll get that from me. But I suppose, you know, to reflect on my, you know, work is not everything. It's, you know, family is important. So I think my job's to look after them and to set them up, set them up for their lives, I think.
I feel like I can feel that you've gone through a shift personally as well. Like, it's like you were very ambitious and now you're at this point in your life where you're like, it's great and I'm here and it's fantastic. Yep. But now I also know just my family's my world, you know, and I want to be able to give all of what I have to offer in the business world to my kids.
Yeah.
And I think that's really powerful. And I think that's something, there are so many phenomenal fathers I know in business that have so much knowledge. And I just love the movement now that I'm seeing of dads just being where you are now and recognizing that impact that they can have with their kids, because there's so much that you have to offer. And clearly you're raising your second family essentially as well. You've been through this in your childhood as well. So I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
So we're going to move into the rocket round now, which is just
a bit of
he's like, hang on, I wasn't prepped for this. It's just a few questions just about you personally. So what podcast are you listening to right now? Do you listen to
No.
Well, there you go. You're going to listen to this one for sure. You're going to have to listen to this one because you'll be on it. And what's your favourite book?
Do you know it's the Mark Manson, How to Not Give a...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Bought that book by somebody who suggested I should read it probably 5 years ago. And I reckon it was a great read.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. I've read that one too. It is good. It is good. It just kind of frees you a bit.
Yeah.
Coffee or wine?
Oh, do I have to pick?
Yeah, you have to.
Coffee.
Yeah,
I think so.
You can't get started without it, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Once more to wind down. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Yeah, that was a really quick response.
Was quick.
Not a cat fan.
We had a cat, but no. Dogs.
Cats are jerks, you know, at the end of the day.
We had one too, like that.
Was it a jerk?
Yep, 100%.
And what makes you feel like you're home?
What makes me feel like home? Oh, home, I think. Our house, our home is very comfortable.
Yeah.
Kids are there, the dogs are there.
Yeah.
You know, plodding around in the yard, doing that sort of stuff. It's just being at home.
Were your border collies naughty when they were little?
Oh, not too bad.
Okay. Well, that's
they've got energy. They do.
You know, but they need to burn off their energy.
Yeah. If you do that, they're normally not too bad.
I always say my son's like a border collie. He's fine. Just got to burn off his energy.
Yeah,
stick him in basketball and lots of sports and he's good.
Yeah, that's
Put him in a room and you know, don't occupy him and he'll be climbing the chairs.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on as a guest.
No problem.
I've really enjoyed having you on. And I learned more about you that I didn't know as well.
So that's the idea.
I'm sure there's people that are going to be listening in that are going to really enjoy your story. And thanks for being so honest. So
no worries. Thanks, Lauren.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks for listening to Building Doors. If you've got comments or questions, send them to hello@buildingdoors.com.au. And remember to subscribe, rate, and review. See you next time.